time to get ready.
Of course. Ready for what?
It's the big interview. Thinking big, living big, talking big with market strategists, money managers, economists, authors, and more.
Get ready to feel the thunder.
Long chats with big brains meant to give you a better view of the big picture.
As far as brains go, I got the lion's share.
As money life goes big time.
Big reason for this success is you.
Literally.
It's big interview time here on Money Life, and I'm pleased to be joined right now by Tim Clift, the Chief Investment Strategist at InvestNet. If you are not familiar with the firm, well, you can go to investpmc.com, the website. You can follow them on Twitter. They're at ENV Intel. And Tim Clift is on Twitter. He's at ENV for InvestNet. He's at ENV Clift. But right now, he's back on Money Life. And by the way, he was last here like 3 or 4 years ago. So he was an early guest on Money Life. I don't really know why we didn't have him back sooner, but I'm pleased to say, Tim Clift, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chuck, for having me back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. But the great thing is that the stock market always allows us to just sort of pick up on a new conversation. Like, you could be gone for a week, a month, a year, 5 years, and it doesn't necessarily make a difference because the market's always giving us plenty to talk about. And in this case, you know, you run a group of analysts who look at selecting investment managers and what have you. So let's start with what we're seeing out of the market in terms of volatility and how that is shaping what people should be considering right now. Because we've got a market where at least the volatility seems heightened, but it also seems like we've now lived through enough heightened volatility that we should just be adjusting to the fact that this isn't heightened. This is normal. This is whatever we're going to see probably in perpetuity. Or am I wrong about that? Is this actually heightened volatility and we're going back to something better someday?
I think we're in it for a while. You know, we saw it in the first quarter where we had a big V-shape, you know, drop into February and then a big rebound again. And we're talking double digits. So, you know, full correction and then back out again. We saw the same thing last August to October. So I don't think it's anything that's going to go away, you know, with the political elections coming up, with oil prices changing, the dollar, you know, falling and rising. All those things are going to have big impact on the markets, and I just don't see it fading away at all.
You mentioned politics, and I don't want to talk politics per se, but I'm curious when you talk about the volatility. This election seems to have had less impact thus far than I would have expected. You have a political situation unlike pretty much anything most of us have seen in our lifetimes. Normally, the market is trying to figure out what's going to happen and pricing those things in. And in this case, I can't tell, but it looks to me like the market is as confused as the general populace as to just how this thing might turn out, and they don't want to actually wager on any of it. Or am I wrong about that? Are they starting to say, hey, these are the outcomes we see?
I think investors are actually getting smarter in figuring out that the elections don't matter as much to the overall markets. I think right now they are kind of pricing in a Clinton win. That's kind of from a statistic standpoint. And if that does happen, that's probably the least surprises that will be expected because it's an administration that's already in house. The other candidates would be much more wild cards. And I think as we get closer, you may see that, again, that volatility spike up a little bit more. But again, I think investors have kind of figured out that even whoever's in the White House, there's lots of good checks and balances that go on so that they just can't come in and turn everything around or make huge dramatic changes all of a sudden. So there's some comfort from an investor standpoint and the market standpoint that that's probably not going to happen, that it's more headline news than is actually going to affect the market.
Yeah, although certain candidates are suggesting they can come in and do just about anything and turn the market on its ear. We'll move away from politics and let's go back to the volatility side and put it in the context of the active versus passive debate. We've got a situation where right now the passive funds are creating the buzz. It's what people want to own. They've come to the conclusion that I'm better off owning the index or what have you, or I'm better off owning smart beta index or something that's created that keeps me low costs and does whatever. And yet, all they're really doing in many cases is transferring where the action is. In other words, hey, I'm working with a financial advisor. That person is buying passive investments. So I can say, I've got the passive investments. But then that person is actively managing those passive investments. What's the better model here? Are we better off saying, hey, I'll be actively passive, which is that case where you're hiring a money manager, they put you into passive funds, but they manage them? Or are we better off being actively active? Let me just go find old-fashioned fund managers. Or passive. Here's my asset allocation. I'm going to go on the benchmarks, and that's it.
Yeah, I think we're seeing active and passive converge. So from a product standpoint, we're seeing the active managers moving into vehicles that are more passive-like, and we're seeing, you know, active ETFs, for example. And on the passive side, we're seeing, you know, more expensive passive products like the smart beta that you talked about. So there's really convergence. And I think eventually we're going to get to one type of product, a kind of lower cost, but that can use active or passive within it. You're right about there being a lot of strategies or managers out there that are using ETFs as the underlying investment vehicle because it is very inexpensive. And I think that's generally a smart thing to do. And they can overlay their thoughts and, you know, kind of where they think the markets are going to go. But I also don't think that we should completely give up on active. I think there's still areas, even though in the first quarter, active really got trounced in general. But if you look at the low cost active managers, and if you looked at some of the less efficient market classes, like small cap, for example, they actually did very well. And they traditionally do very well. So it's good to understand, you know, when to use active. You know, I don't think an all active strategy is necessarily always the best route, but it also depends on market conditions. If correlations are high or low, or volatility is high or low, those different market environments can have a very different impact on active managers versus passive managers. So I know I'm not answering yes or no or all
no,
active or all passive.
You're not.
Yeah.
But you raised an interesting issue, which is most of the logic that has gone into people saying, oh, I should be passive, has been how the numbers get played. And I wrote about this recently, and you mentioned, well, you haven't necessarily seen the active managers doing great, but if you took the low cost active managers, they as a group have done better. And in fact, there have been a couple of studies recently that came out and said, look, you can find active management that works. You're never going to get overcome the numbers, but that's because when you put in the average fund, well, the average fund includes a whole bunch of funds that they're actively managed, but they're not keeping their expense ratios down. They're not doing any of the other right things. Do you believe that the case against active management is basically overblown by sort of self-interested folks and the goofiness of the numbers?
I do in general, yes. I really think the argument is not active versus passive, but it's high cost versus low cost. So if you can have low cost active and low cost passive, I think that's much better comparisons that you can make. So I think both the active managers and the passive managers are going to come out with studies that are going to be proponents of their type of strategy. But when we look at it, we are very unbiased. We're just, you know, we're going to say, well, you know, in this market environment, active is better, or in these asset classes, active or passive is better. And I think that's a much better way to construct a portfolio.
When people think about the whole active versus passive debate, we now create these smart beta and other tools. Are we creating the proverbial better mousetrap, and it really is a better mousetrap? Or are we creating a different mousetrap, and that allows you to then look at it differently, market it differently, and do those other things? Because I have a hard time looking at this with, like, my kids who are in their early 20s and are starting investors right now. For them, buying the legacy index funds still makes sense. But I'm being told, oh, there's this product and it's better, or this is a better constructed index. And I'm sure that by the time I have grandkids and I'm trying to teach them about investing, there will be something else that is newfangled and different. How much can people rely on the legacy products and have them be okay? Whereas, oh, by the way, if you managed a pension fund or something in an endowment or something like that, then maybe you need to go all the way to some new whole hog thing because every little last basis point counts.
Yeah, I think we're getting into product confusion within ETFs. It used to be really simple when they started back in the 90s, and it was just the broad indexes that they were tracking, and they were low cost. Now there's over 2,000 ETFs, And I just saw one firm out there launching a whole series of healthcare ETFs, and one is focused on obesity, and one is on fitness, and one is on long-term care. You know, so these things are getting so niche that I'm just not sure you're going to get a whole lot of diversification, because you may not have a whole lot of holdings that actually track to those things. Or, and I don't know how viable they are, because we see a lot of these small ones that maybe don't catch on and then get closed down. So I think there's buzz originally, and then depending on the cost and the traction, they either last or they don't last. I don't think all newer is always better. I think there's a lot of, with these smart beta, you know, they've got great historical track records that are back-tested, but not maybe a lot of experience yet. So, you know, I am very cautious when I'm looking at these. I like to see how they perform for a while and see if they're the real thing. And, you know, there's a few factors that have been proven over a long time, like momentum and value, but there's other ones that, you know, again, I'd be hesitant about jumping into, and probably the old stuff is still just as good.
Well, Tim, I appreciate the perspective. I wish I had more time, because I have more questions. So promise me you won't stay away a couple of years before we get you back on the show.
I'd love to come back another time, Chuck.
Thank you very much. Tim Clift is Chief Investment Strategist for InvestNet. He's on Twitter at ENVClift. And the firm, it's online at investpmc.com. Hey, we just hit the halfway poll on the April 14th edition of Money Life. Up next, Collective Wisdom from Hightower Global Investment Solutions. And then the Money Life Market Call. Stay tuned.